You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
Rabbit out of the hat. Is this a rabbit out of the hat budget, as some are saying on Twitter? Well, what we have seen is lower taxes, debt more under control than expected, some realistic growth forecasts, and some might say that is pulling the rabbit out of a hat. We'll find out now from Nazmira Muller, head of SA Investments at 91, what she thinks. Nazmira, is this a big rabbit out of a mangy hat?
Good evening, Michael. I don't think it's a rabbit out the hat, but I think it's a very solid budget that does a lot of sensible things in very difficult circumstances.
Like?
Well, what we've realized over the last couple of months is that revenues are running somewhat ahead of the expectations in October. So now the Treasury is telling us that we're going to have about 100 billion rand more than expected in October. But there's still this complete realization that we're 200 billion rand worse than we were in February 2020. So it was going to be 300, now it's 200. There would have been a lot of temptation, I think, to try and spend that incremental, the higher revenue. And that's not what the Treasury's done. There's been some targeted spending increases for the coming year that starts 1st April 2021, but that's concentrated around COVID and the vaccine rollout, and around the public sector jobs program that I think largely replaces the the COVID special grant that expires at the end of April. So it's a 33 billion rand increase in expenditure, once-off expenditure for 1 year, doesn't affect the outer years, and you've got 100 billion rand extra in revenue. And what the Treasury has done with that is they've actually said they're going to issue less debt, they're going to borrow less, because we're borrowing such enormous sums that reducing that amount is exactly what we need to see happening at the moment.
Yeah, issuance. And the bond market was telling you that if we can reduce issuance, then we start to put a cap on our runaway debt pile. And with that, the increasing share of revenues that we spend on servicing that debt, that has been the big headache for government. When it comes to the wage bill, and there are obviously differences between Labour and many in business and other social partners about what we need to do to tackle unemployment. Was there a sense in this budget that, and we often think of inflation as the cruelest tax on the poor, but unemployment must now be the cruelest tax in South Africa? Has the budget done enough to recognise this, to help stimulate job-rich recovery?
I think it's gone some way. And I think the main mechanism is this 11 billion rand allocated to the public works program to try and create those low and unskilled jobs. And then the other side is this freeze on wages over 3 years. And I was listening to Matthew Cox, and I often have arguments about this. And I have sympathy for a good chunk of public sector workers, notably the nurses and the doctors, who have been the real heroes of the last year. And I think they certainly deserve special bonuses. They deserve all of our thanks. But I think there are a whole lot of teachers who just didn't work last year. And unfortunately, the way the public sector bargaining forum is set up is your wage increases apply to everybody. And I think that is no longer appropriate. So if we want to talk about retaining skills, we need to be addressing the skills of the people that actually do the job, which means when we talk about labor market reform, the place that I think needs to be addressed is ability to fire, particularly in the public sector, the underperforming people.
Right, and then that will have a key a positive output on productivity, which is going to be a key part of this conversation, doing more with less. When it comes to the South African economy broadly, I mean, you understand debt capital markets better than most. To get business to invest, you're going to have to reduce the cost of capital. It's very much linked to what the 10-year bond rate is sitting at the moment. So say 8.5% plus an equity risk premium, call that 5%. So there's this hurdle there that's in place before businesses are going to invest, and it's sitting between 13% and 14%. What is the big structural reform that you'd like to see government moving on with more urgency to help reduce and lower this this cost of capital to get businesses to invest?
So a lot of what's built into that 10-year bond yield is a real concern around South Africa's debt sustainability. If you look at how much borrowing rates have fallen in much of the rest of the world since the advent of COVID. South Africa, its rates remain relatively high. So what we need to do is control spending, which I think this budget has focused on doing, but that's not sufficient. What we then need to do is get growth going. And the single biggest constraint for growth is the energy space. And we need to see the reforms that the president announced in the Sona accelerated and being delivered in the timeframes promised.
Nasmira Muller, and that is the number one issue, head of SA Investments at 91. I'm going to have to say goodbye now and welcome Peter Attard Montalto, who's head of capital market research at Intellidex. And Peter, this is really an area of specialization for you. You're part of all of the WhatsApp groups that discuss energy daily. I don't know where you have time to do anything else other than comment on various WhatsApp groups on energy, because it is the number one issue in the country. Was there enough in this budget around Eskom, about the debt, about timelines to give you confidence that the energy nettle is being grasped?
No, basically. I think the real problem here is that Operation Brilliant Lello is doing all the right things on behalf of Treasury, on behalf of the presidency, but fundamentally, if you don't bust through the political blockages, which is not ultimately possible for a group of technocrats, very good as they are, then you can't move the dial. The problem of always reading the budget review is that it has to copy-paste what is in the Sona, the commitments that are made. But I think as we saw in Parliament this morning, DMRE preparing before the committee there is really a strong pushback on this issue of raising the licensing threshold. The complications of spinning out an ISMO are only just, I think, dawning on people, a huge number of legislative and regulatory steps that have to be undertaken. So unfortunately, I think these things aren't going to happen as laid out in the budget review. And the proof really was in the pudding. I don't have those reforms in my growth forecast, and Treasury roughly agrees with me, which I think kind of says everything we need to know about what Treasury sees as the long-run upside from structural reform.
What is the big delay in amending Schedule 2, for example? Many are upset because we heard the Minerals and Energy Minister at last year's mining indaba talk about amending Schedule 2 to raise the cap on own gen from 1 to 50 megs. And then a year later, we have it mentioned again at the State of the Nation and a timeline of 3 to 4 months. Why was it just not delivered? Why didn't the president just rock up with a signed document saying, well, this is what we've done? What's the delay about?
Well, the problem is that the Electricity Regulation Act basically says that the Minister of Energy, or DMRE Minister, is the one who is able and has the capacity to ultimately issue determinations and issue amendments to Schedule 2. And this is the problem. You need a cabinet directive. We've seen very successfully last year how, for instance, DPE can use cabinet directives, cabinet minutes, to make things happen on SAA funding. And, you know, the president should have done exactly the same, sent a cabinet minutes mandating the DMRE to do this. But this is not how this works fundamentally, because he doesn't want to bring these sorts of political arguments to a head. And I think this is really where Operation Brilliant Lello will struggle, is where they do need such political direction, it will come late or not at all. But where they don't need it, such as where they have backing of a department that's been seen in water in particular, they will make a lot of headway actually in the coming year. And that's really going to be the deciding factor.
Perhaps these things need to be written into performance agreements that were signed with the various line ministers to say, well, this is something you've got to deliver, and here's the timeline. Is that a way around this?
Possibly, but let's not forget that procuring new nuclear is in the performance agreement of DMRE as well. Actually, tabling a budget isn't in the performance agreement of National Treasury or Tito and Boni. So all these things are much of a muchness, basically, if these performance agreements have any teeth. That's certainly something that we have to be watching. These were only really signed and published through the end of last year, and we now have to see in this post-Sona period if people are really held to account on them, or if National Treasury and others can use these as a big stick to whack other ministers over the head with.
Turning now to Labour, and just having spoken to both Zwelinzima Mavavi and COSATU's Matthew Parks, you're dealing with Labour movement, both inside and sort of outside the tripartite alliance, that is very unhappy with government at this stage. So if you look at the credibility of delivering this wage freeze in the public sector. How credible is that in this environment?
Well, this is the central problem. There's about 130 billion of movement here that we can see going forwards if you move from zero nominal wages increases, that's flat, up to zero real, that's inflation adjustments. You'd have to add back in an extra 130 billion. Now, zero real, adjusting by inflation historically, would still be an amazing outcome versus the large real increases they got in the past. But the numbers are big here in how it can move. It's the same on inflation adjustments around grants. We got a very bizarre, I think, bad move to move grants up by less than inflation. And actually, we should see that probably is at some point revised. And again, that will add some extra, not as much as the wages, only about $4 billion or so extra in the coming year. But yes, these adjustments are going to be very important going forward. On the flip side, on the employment side, positive that the presidential employment stimulus did get its $13 billion, I think it was, from National Treasury. National Treasury were very reluctant to provide that money initially, but thankfully, in the broader context, that was now there.
When we look at what is good in this budget, is there anything that gives you confidence that this expected economic rebound this year won't just become a dead cat bounce?
Well, that's the fear, I think, in terms of further waves, the vaccination pace, etc. And if we see an ebbing of this offshore boon from commodity prices, then yes, that current bounce back can peter off in nominal GDP terms pretty quickly. So yes, there's a lot hanging on the outlook from a variety of different fronts, domestically from COVID, from investment, from nominal GDP, from terms of trade. That revenue outlook becomes very different. The debt outlook becomes very different. And that's why we ultimately don't see debt GDP stabilizing in the medium run, when you also add back in some of those issues such as wages as well.
That was Peter Attard-Montalto, Head of Capital Markets Research at Intellidex. We're going to do a deeper dive into that budget with him tomorrow.